Hello everyone, welcome to episode 103 of Double Jump Radio, the official podcast of doublejump.co. I'm your host, John, joined by my co-host, Kai.
Hello.
How you doing, Kai?
I am phenomenal. Living the dream. Every day is a gift. Same old spiel. What about yourself?
Fine. We talked about Alan Wake 2 so much last week, and I didn't end up playing any more of it.
Oh, I finished it.
Junk food. Oh, you have? Okay. Yeah.
I've done nothing else.
Right. because it's like, we talked about it before, it's like, I want a dark room and headphones, and my door closed, and I haven't been able to, like, fully bubble myself in the house as often, so I haven't been able to play it.
Yeah, hopefully you get some time this weekend. Cheer yourself.
Yeah, hopefully. It's cat-related, so hopefully it's... Yeah, we'll get to it later, maybe. Otherwise, a beer's off this week. A bit sick, but I'm sure we'll be back next time. Otherwise, we have some news of the past week. First off, BlizzCon was over the last week. I actually forget exactly what day, but they announced a few things. I just realized I forgot one thing from the show notes. But first off is Diablo 4's first expansion, which is very Diablo 2 inspired, actually. Is titled Vessel of Hatred, which I feel is the most edgelordy thing I've heard from a game title in a while.
I mean, it's Diablo.
Yes, but it feels like a step above a few things. It was announced by a pre-rendered trailer, very Blizzard style. It returns to the jungles of Torajan from Diablo 2's third act. It also adds a new class. They didn't say what it was. Diablo 4's production director, Tiffany Watt, she described it as, quote, a completely new class never seen before in the Diablo universe. Other than that, we don't have any official information. There was some supposedly leaked information on the expansion that came out right before BlizzCon. Don't know if it's true or not. Who knows? We'll see. There's like reason to believe it is, but whatever. The new class will supposedly be called Spiritborn. It will be glaive-wielding, nature and flight-focused warrior. From what other people put together, it sounds a lot like how the monk operates in Diablo 3. Sort of like close-range, elemental type. Fast warrior type, yeah, of which I don't think there's much in Diablo 4 that's like that. So there's a rogue, but they operate differently from what I understand. Aside from that, the leak also mentioned a new mercenary system for hiring followers and a new raid. Otherwise, the expansion is set to release late next year, and sure we'll hear more about it before then.
Yeah, Vessel of Hatred. Sounds fun.
It's fun. I'm curious to see how Diablo 4 develops, because it's kind of in such a service game mode since it released, compared to previous games. So kind of, by the time the expansion comes out, it could just have a very different reputation all of a sudden. So I don't know.
Yeah. I've always sort of watched the Diablo games from the sidelines a little bit. I've never really gotten involved and played them.
Right.
And I haven't kept up with Diablo 4, so maybe this will be the one to get me into it.
Maybe. It looks very pretty, but it looks, I've heard like kind of rougher things about it, but I don't know. A lot of that seems to be connected to how much of a service game it is, which I don't know, is very Blizzard lately after Overwatch and such. Otherwise, Blizzard also announced the next three new expansions for World of Warcraft. It's kind of different than what they usually do, which is one at a time, naturally. This was announced by Chris Metzen via pre-rated cinematic as well. Metzen actually retired from Blizzard in 2016. He took on an advisor role in 2022, but he announced back in September that he is now in a, quote, full-time role as the executive creative director of the Warcraft universe. And so these expansions seem to be a direct consequence of him coming back to Blizzard in such a big capacity. Mm-hmm. So these three expansions will make up the World Soul Saga. So first is The War Within, from Metzen. There's a few quotes. So he says, for The War Within, quote, "You'll be descending into the heart of Azeroth itself, exploring new subterranean kingdoms and engaging with ancient cultures." So underground themed, basically. Midnight, "You'll be returning to the old world, to the fabled lands of Kel'Thalas. There, the forces of the void have invaded Azeroth, etc." I don't really know the Worldcraft lore. It sounds heavy. Lastly, the last expansion of this World Soul Saga is called The Last Titan. Quote, "You'll be returning to the old world, this time to the wintry lands of Northrend." Northrend is the continent that was introduced in Wrath of the Lich King, more than a decade ago now. It's from Metzen. He says, "And there at Alduar, you'll bear the witness to the return of the Titans to Azeroth." From what I understand, as someone who's not super well-versed or at all versed on Warcraft lore, the Titans are sort of the main focal point of the lore, like, you know, far out in the distance. Like, that's, like, the biggest mystery, I think, of Warcraft's loot universe. So it sounds like they're finally getting to it after a very long time. Or right. Whatever that means, really.
World of but Warcraft endgame.
Yeah, they're something like
wrap,
that.
They're going to wrap things up for good.
Yeah, I think they've actually stressed already that it's like, this isn't the end, guys. It's going to keep going. But I think they want to stress that this is like a big, important time for WoW again. Because I think there's some quote from Metzen as well saying it's like, if you dropped off WoW a long time ago or you've been playing for a while, like, this is the time to jump back in. And it's just like, I mean, I suppose that's always kind of the play.
They say that ahead of every expansion.
Yeah, I know. But it's like, it does feel like it's like a, you know, Marvel-like, you know, calendar of like, this is when all the stuff is coming out. And you can be kind of anticipate things so far ahead, which I think is kind of a little unusual for games and especially unusual for WoW. So it's, yeah.
I mean, part of me wonders if maybe there's not going to be as much to the first two of these expansions. So they're trying to sell those two on the basis of the third.
Yeah, true.
But that's very cynical of me, and that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
But it feels like the kind of marketing you would do in that situation.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of like, as someone who did play WoW for a bit in high school and was very bad at it, enough that it's kind of drove me off from playing it again, I don't think. It draws me in the idea of like being able to anticipate things like, you know, whole like story arcs ahead of time. Like if like the first one's good, it'll just kind of latch you into the next one, theoretically, which I think that's how sequels work, but I don't know.
It should be MMO, the idea though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably a bit, optimistic, but we'll see. The War Within, set to release next year. The features they've described so far is a new allied race called Earthen, valid with both Horde and Alliance players. They look a lot like dwarves, except they're a bit bigger, and they have like stone-like skin. There will be four new zones, mostly set underground. There will be new hero talent trees. I'm actually not sure exactly what that means. More of Dragonflight's physics-based dynamic flying. So in Dragonflight, a big feature was having dragon mounts that were exclusive to Dragonflight's region, but they used a new flight system that was physics-based versus normal mounts where you're just kind of gliding through space without any sort of physics at all. So it sounds like, from the press release, I think, it says, quote, "Now available for hundreds of existing mounts." So they're basically adding those systems to existing stuff, which I think is a cool thing to do for that kind of thing in particular. There'll be endgame treasure vaults called Delves, and a new feature, Warbands, which offers, quote, account-wide progression across your family of characters on your Battle.net account, regardless of their faction, which I guess is just another step towards unifying the Horde Alliance dichotomy, which I think a lot of players are into it, but I think over time it's become more of a burden for most people in terms of like getting raids together and just like generally playing the game with less friction for certain aspects of the game. So it's I'm guessing that's kind of what it speaks to. But otherwise it feels like the biggest thing out of WoW in a while. Last few expansions from a distance, as someone who doesn't play it, I've seen very supplementary, you know, like they haven't really, there was like the Panda one, which is apparently very good, but you know, from the outside it doesn't look like it would be that alluring as like a new player necessarily. And then like Dragonflight also seemed quite, you know, just another expansion feeling. And I forget the others, to be honest. Oh, there was one that was about the Alliance Horde war, which I forget the name of. But
I thought the whole thing was supposed to be about the Alliance Horde war. I thought that was the basis.
I think it's just got very, very convoluted as the lore is, which makes sense.
It would, yeah.
Yeah. So I think now it's just kind of more annoying as they try to, like, as the game itself, as the writing tries to find ways to get them to fight again, even though they keep teaming up to fight off new big bad fantasy bosses. Yeah,
you'd think at a certain point you'd just be like, all right, let's be friends.
Yeah. Which I think is, like, there's a cinematic trailer for The War Within, which I think is, like, actually kind of had a nice mood to it compared to most Blizzard trailers that I've seen. It was very very dramatic and down to earth in a way that I think is unusual for them. And it was very, it seemed to be about the idea of the Alliance and Horde just kind of finally settling things. I don't know. That seemed to be the vibe.
That would be nice. Let's get to it. Give peace a chance.
Also in WoW, WoW Classic, it was be introducing a new Season of Discovery. So it'll be skipping public testing phase and launching directly on November 30th. It kind of seems to mostly resemble the Classic Plus concept that like players have sort of originated themselves over time. Basically the idea that Blizzard would have mainline WoW with new expansions, then they'll kind of have a fork from Classic era WoW with new content in that direction. And that's kind of, there's a lot of reasons why that probably doesn't make a ton of sense for Blizzard to spend a lot of time on. But there's a big audience that wants something like that. So this seems to be a bit like that. It seems to be like a designate, like it's a season of content, similar to Diablo, I suppose. We'll start with an initial level 25 cap, where Classic WoW usually goes to 60. I've reworked 10-player Black Fathom Deeps raid, 10-player Black Fathom Deeps raid with, quote, reimagined bosses, mechanics, and rewards. And after a couple months, the level cap will raise again, and Blizzard will introduce another set of reimagined endgame content, and also a new rune system that lets players customize and gain new abilities, which is apparently quite Diablo-ish in particular. So that's, we'll see how that goes, I guess. I'm curious to see how WoW Classic, like, us. On WoW Classic, actually, they also announced WoW Classic Cataclysm. This is WoW's third expansion that they originally released in 2010. We'll launch in the first half of 2024. I feel like a lot of people aren't super interested in Cataclysm. I think it's the point where a lot of people, like, Wrath of Lich King was the, I think for a lot of that era of players, was kind of the peak of the product. So I'm kind of curious to see how Cataclysm does. I imagine it won't do quite as hot as the previous ones.
I mean, as someone very isolated from WoW, even I know how big Wrath of the Lich King is supposed to be.
Yeah.
The huge turning point.
So maybe this season will be sort of like a starting, like a test run for something.
I guess that's it. Maybe they're scoping out demand, and then they'll come in with Wrath of the Lich King and everyone will be happy.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. We're talking about gamers here. They're never happy.
It also kind of reminded me of RuneScape, because I follow one person on YouTube who I think is like the most followed RuneScape guy ever since he started like a series a couple of years ago. But like I remember him doing one series about like a specific like season that I think only lasts like maybe a month. It has like a lot of like remix mechanics, and it feels a lot like that, where you just kind of the idea of throwing in like a remixed chunk of time of the game, you know, that exists. I don't know. I think that's a cool approach to an MMO, is to be able to just like have a side mode that exists in like for the sake of long-term players specifically who know a lot of it, and you're playing with that knowledge that has existed for like a decade or at least. So it's there's a lot to mine there if Blizzard want to keep going that direction.
I like the idea of potentially having workarounds based on future knowledge.
Yeah,
which I think could be fun, but I don't know if they'll go that route.
Yeah, I forgot to put it on the show notes, but Blizzard also announced the latest next hero for Overwatch, and I think they announced a couple more after that as well. Which I'll show. I don't think either of us play it. I won't bother with it too much. But like, what's it? It's like Maori? Or no, it can't be Maori because that's a word of a real thing. It doesn't matter. They announced that. I'm sorry for not putting it in now.
That's fine. Overwatch probably has a new character.
One looks cool because it's like Splatoon based and it has like a drill and it's like the first non-binary character of the cast.
Oh, that's fun.
It's like, yes, they have a drill where they can grow underground and run around that way. And then I forget what else they have a couple. I don't know.
Can other characters follow them underground, or is it just them?
I think it's just them.
Ah, get it together, Blizzard. That'd be a rad mechanic.
Yeah, I think they look fun from the little bit I saw of them. The new one with the miniguns also looks good.
I don't know. They're gonna have to be like brilliant to get me back into Overwatch at this point.
Yeah.
I'm tired, John.
Yeah, otherwise I think that that wraps up BlizzCon for this year. I think it's like a fairly big BlizzCon, all things considered, but yeah. That was first BlizzCon owned by Microsoft too, because Phil Spencer also gave a keynote, which I don't think he said much other than saying, "We're all in this together." And then, you know, going off. So
I guess that leads into story two. Yes. Set up segue from John. Round of applause. But going from Microsoft, Xbox has partnered with a startup called InWorld AI to create a generative AI toolset that developers can use to create games. Hooray! It's a multi-year collaboration, which Xbox says will assist and empower creators in dialogue, story, and quest design. Angling that these tools can help make it easier for developers to realize their visions, try new things, push boundaries, and experiment to improve gameplay, player connection, and more. Similar to AI chatbots, the idea is you can turn prompts into scripts, dialogue trees, quests, and you know, everything you would want in a game. They're also working on an AI character runtime engine, allowing players to generate new stories and dialogues and quests. So, a whole lot of content with no heart and no soul and no passion behind it. Phenomenal. Huge.
Future is bright.
Yeah. You may be picking really up sucks from this bit that I'm not thrilled about this.
Yeah, me neither. It's like, I'll talk about it more later, actually, but it's like I've been playing Fallout 4 a lot because it's a good junk food game, and that is, like, kind of close to this idea because that has a lot of, like, procedurally generated quests in it as well on top of, like, hand-made ones. But even the handmade ones in that game are not stellar or anything, like, usually not. So it's like, it definitely feels like I've already been playing something like it lately.
Yeah. I feel like we've Starfield gone
played like that too.
Past junk food games, like AI games, I just, this is a nutrition gel.
Yes.
Yes, it's the bare minimum. It'll keep you alive, but it's not going to be good.
Is this the life you want?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so surely we've learnt by now that AI is bad at creativity. It's great at coming up with regurgitating recipes and emails, but it is not good at art. Why are we still
Xbox
trying?
Xbox seem to be, or Microsoft in general, seem to be all in on saving as much money as I can off robots and off less people.
I mean, I'm sure it will save money.
I don't know. This sounds costly. I don't know. It does sound like something that would work in particular circumstances, not in a good way, just as in, like, you know, they'll eventually find some way to fit it into something that will click, I guess. I don't know. It is sad.
I'm confident that someone will find a space for it that could be helpful. But I think it's going to be the same thing we've heard. It's always framed as it's going to make creatives' lives easier. And it turns out to make them jobless.
Right. Yeah, it's not. There's like a big, like, in the information available, like with this announcement, like a lot of it is trying to push as like, yeah, developers, it'll be way easier. Like, this will save you time, save you money. And a lot of time it's just exactly what you imagine is like the bad side of that that arrangement. So it's not looking forward to that.
I mean, anything generative by design can only rehash ideas that have already been done. It cannot do something new.
Yeah, so I feel kind of bad of playing something lately that's so reminiscent of it. It's good if I have other voices in the background telling me funny things while I play on autopilot. So we'll see how that goes. In other sad news, developer The Glory Society has closed up shop, or announced that they will be imminently. This is a studio, essentially the same people behind Night in the Woods. They're working on the successor to that game, Revenant Hill. So they just shared a statement on social media saying that two key members of this team had had serious health issues and required them to step away from the project. From the statement, it said, quote, "For all intents and purposes, this is the end of the development of Revenant Hill. We are a small team. We each wear multiple hats. This is a loss of several hard to replace hats in an environment where all hats are needed. Given the realities of schedules, budgets, and the fraught task of reworking the whole project within these parameters, team has amicably decided to suspend operations." They also mentioned, quote, we are a cooperative and we make decisions as a group. For this was the clear path to take for the well-being of the team, which is frankly more important than games. And
we know, yeah, one of the team members who's come sick is Scott Benson, who is the creative lead and founder of Glory Society. So we definitely hope he's feeling better soon. This is bittersweet, because obviously, you know, health should come first, and they are right to stop development and let their team members recover. But, you know, a studio closing its doors is rough, especially a indie studio like The Glory Society.
Yeah, it's like they seemed like, especially after what happened after the previous game, it's just like, I mean, it's a different situation, but it's like, it's another, you know, kind of like sad beat for the team that I won't really go into the history of it. You can look it up because it's sad.
It is sad, not, and I don't think we're equipped to have that discussion.
Yeah, exactly. But it's yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know, like another indie team closing shop or just otherwise being severely, fractured, I suppose. This one is like health issues, not even seemingly related to the current like wave of layoffs at all, because it would be such a small team anyway. But it's, I don't know, just keeps
also
happening, keeps going.
The loss of Revenant Hill is disappointing. I know a lot of people were very keen for it. Night in the Woods was fantastic.
Yeah, I was very, I really enjoyed the premise of Revenant Hill, like the teaser trailer and what information we had so far, which I think is like a haunted town. I don't quite remember the exact gist of it, but I remember reading the information. I was like, oh, that's a cooler vibe than I expected. Yeah,
definitely a bit spooky, a bit fun. I hope they land on their feet and get their get their ducks in a row. Maybe we can see Revenant Hill one day, but
yeah, hopefully,
or at least the team, you know, keeps working on something.
Speaking of landing on their feet, I've got some new voices in gaming, or old ones, but you know, new outlets, new places. First up, there are two new subscription-based gaming media outlets suddenly arrive from out of nowhere. Oh, one's out of nowhere. The other one's sort of a very direct consequence of something. First is Aftermath. Former writers from Kotaku, Washington Post, and Vice have teamed up to create a new outlet. The founders are Nathan Grayson, Judah Jackson, Riley McLeod, and Luke Plunkett. In particular, they're sort of very much the voices of Kotaku from a certain period of time. From the site, they say that Aftermath intends to focus on breaking news, criticism, and analysis. Not much else to say there other than that it's, you know, just like a lot of these other news sites, they're a consequence of Kotaku's purchase and subsequent, you know, breaking down by a larger company that is not willing to give them what they need to be successful, and so on. Second new outlet is called Second Wind. This is a new outlet by former Escapist staff. This happened pretty much immediately after the termination of editor-in-chief Nick Calandra. After he was fired, there was a number of journalists from Escapist who resigned in response. This included Ben Crosshaw, otherwise known as Yahtzee, created the video review series Zero Punctuation. And those two are sort of joined at the hip, or rather, Escapist leaned heavily on Zero Punctuation for a long period of time, as I understand it. Like, it's very joint, their success. So it's he's a big one to lose in particular for the sake of Escapist itself.
I mean, losing Nick and Yahtzee at the same time is a huge blow to the group.
Yes. Nick Calandra, he provided a response to GameIndustry.biz about his termination. He said, quote, "We were given unattainable goals in a very short amount of time after being sold to Gamers Group by Enthusiast Gaming. We grew year over year for all 4 years I ran the Escapist, unfortunately, while ultimately more sustainable in the long run and not being reliant on shifting ad revenue from quarter to quarter. That kind of growth wasn't fast enough for gamers in the short term, despite our model clearly growing year after year." So this new publication, Second Wind, it's employee-owned, independent, subscription-based as well, will be focused on videos, podcasts, and live streams. In a similar vein, just because it kind of reminded me of it, Remap Radio is sort of in a similar boat. I mean, they were literally exact same deal several months ago. They were formed by former Waypoint and Vice people following Vice's bankruptcy in May, June. But they recently started publishing written features in October, in addition to the podcasts and streams they already do. So they're sort of in the same overall boat. So basically three new-ish websites available for writing and streams and game voices in a more, hopefully in a sustainable, positive sense. From the sites these writers originally were employed before, so it's mostly good. I think
this is good. Seeing a twist, a shift more over to subscription based independent outlets, which I think is a good thing. So I think that will give them a little bit more freedom outside of sponsored content, which a lot of non subscription based outlets have really relied on, and that really cuts into their credibility. Having this level of freedom will be a good thing if they can get the momentum up, get some subscribers.
It seems like a good alternative to what we've known for a long time, not in that it radically changes much or anything, frankly, but it's like it's important to have these sites as places for particularly, you know, strong, well-known writers in the gaming space, because I think they tend to be sort of, I don't know, it's like, you know, Kotaku and Waypoint, and it's like they tend to exist in it for a certain amount of time in a really strong way, then eventually they just suddenly collapse through no fault of their own. It's because of people above them doing running the site in a way that's just, you know, unfair. So it's I just hope these kind of can keep going. I mean,
they very much have the benefit of coming in with name recognition.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I have no doubt that Yahtzee's new site will do well. The other ones, less confident than Yahtzee, but I think they'll get going.
You know,
A lot of the writers involved already have followings of their own. Which I think they'll bring.
I guess we'll see. Speaking of followings for new things, I don't know, does that work?
Yeah, sure. I'll take that. So following the success of the animated Super Mario movie, we've had an announcement of a live-action Legend of Zelda movie. That was announced on Nintendo's Twitter account as a bit of a surprise. It confirmed that Shigeru Miyamoto will serve as a producer, surprising no one. Also producing will be Avi Arad. It will be financed by Nintendo and Sony, which is an interesting matchup. But that's all right. It will be directed by Wes Ball, who also directed the Maze Runner trilogy, and is working on the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes movie, which is coming up. Derek Connolly has written the script, or is writing the script. He's also written the Jurassic World trilogy and Rise of Skywalker. And theatrical distribution will be done worldwide by Sony Pictures Entertainment. So, sort of immediately after the announcement, speculation went around over who is going to play Link. All the names you would expect. Obviously, Chris Pratt went around as a joke. Tom Holland, I think, is less of a joke, but I think is unlikely.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was also an unlikely choice for Nathan Drake, so who knows?
Yeah, I have no one in mind when it comes to Link, as like, for when it comes to an actor. I don't know, it could be anyone. It's like, considering how the Mario movie went, it's just like, it seems easy to assume a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Good and bad. But the fact that it's live action is surprising.
I'm
curious to see how that goes.
I am not surprised at a Legend of Zelda movie. I am gobsmacked that it's going to be live action. That is insanity to me.
I think the one thing I don't mind about it is that it draws a clear line in the sand between this movie and the Mario movie, because I saw a lot of people assuming or wanting like a multiverse setup eventually with Nintendo.
Yeah, but
whether, you know, Zelda,
like, cards on the table. That idea is stupid as hell and is bad. And everyone who said you wanted Link and Mario to cross over in a Smash Bros. Movie, you're stupid. Think it through. It would be bad.
Yeah. So I also don't enjoy that idea much. So it's like, in that sense, I'm not against it. And it's like, I guess when I think about it more, it's like there aren't too many like earnest, like classic fantasy, like traditional fantasy movies. So maybe it kind of like feels, isn't there? Like, I feel like there aren't too many.
I feel like there are a lot.
Okay. What am I missing?
I mean, Lord of the Rings is one. That was pretty big.
Done ages ago. That was a long time ago.
There's also The Hobbit.
A long time ago.
The Hobbit was not that long ago. That was, you know, the last decade.
Yeah, I suppose. But it's like, I feel like there's always like a gap to fill in the market in terms of like that particular genre. And there aren't, like, it reminds me of when, it's like a silly thing to compare it to, but like, you know, but like when the Jumanji reboots came out, as just kind of adventure movies, and Uncharted is kind of in the similar vein. As like, I'm not saying that like the Jumanji ones are fine, Uncharted's rougher, but generally they feel the same gaff in terms of like for like the just sort of mid-budget genre flicks in that vein. Where it's just like, I think if Legend of Zelda could be, you know, sort of a classic fantasy thing after not getting, Well, especially if it's good. That'd be nice too. But it's I don't know. Like I'm curious if it could like
I'll
have a distinct quality to it, I guess.
I'll accept it only if it's really more of a Legend of Zelda spin on the Princess Bride. Or non-stop comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. Not against that either. Yeah, so far it's like the only creative talent we have so far is the West Ball. I haven't seen any of the Maze Runner movies. The upcoming, like the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes movie got a trailer recently. And it looked pretty good. I like those movies. You know, he wasn't responsible for the other ones, but the trailer itself is impressive, I thought. Derek Connolly has like the worst geek creds you can have as a writer, the Jurassic World trilogy and Rise of Skywalker, so that was less inspiring. But, you know, scriptwriters in Hollywood are, I think it's like harder to judge them unless they have a real long history of bad stuff, I guess, when it comes to writing.
Yeah.
But that's my understanding. So who knows? It could be better.
A lot of the issues with those movies had nothing to do with the original scripts. It was the production as a whole. So
yeah,
and I mean, I trust Shigeru Miyamoto. Avi Arad.
Yeah. If you look at his Wikipedia page and see all the movies he's executive produced, it is not as impressive as Shigeru Miyamoto's list of productions. I imagine Miyamoto will be very hands-on, like he supposedly was in the Mario movie. So it's a good chance he'll at least keep stuff on rails, hopefully. We'll see, I suppose.
I would hope. I'd feel bad for him if, you know, Nintendo finally learns to trust again in movie adaptations of their work. They put Mario out. It does really well. They're finally learning to love again. And then Legend of Zelda tanks because it's bad.
And this is after they, there was like the leak from Netflix about the series they were kind of developing. Then they cancelled it because it was leaked. And then it's just like, they look at Avi Arad. I was like, oh, this guy, he knows what he's doing. Let's put a movie together. With Sony, also a good track record as of late.
I mean, maybe it's just a live action curse because their live action Mario, also not great.
True.
I mean, I well, love it, but not because it's good.
Right.
So that's
hopeful, but only so hopeful for Legend of Zelda movie. I think
I'll wait until cast is announced and then start judging. But you know. You can't fully judge a movie until it comes out.
Yeah, very true. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this week's news. We'll just take a short break and come back for the chit chat. Yeah, so aside from the news, there's been naturally a lot of gaming around. I was meant to play Alan Wake 2. I didn't. I played other worse things. First I want to talk about a little bit, not much, is the new mini season of Fortnite called Fortnite OG. It's like a throwback to the first chapter, because currently we're in chapter 4. Throwback to basically when it like was just getting like ultra popular. So around season 5 of then, which I guess was, I don't know, 6 months or so in. I'm not sure how long those usually went. But it's a 4-week mini season before a whole brand new chapter and new map and everything starts. So this means that back to the old map, which has been slightly tweaked, but barely. It's very much an old Fortnite map. All old weapons. All the mechanics, like a lot of the mechanics that have been added to the game over time have been rolled back. So it's just like a lot of it feels very sparse on purpose. And like as someone who never played it back then, it's kind of startling how different it is. Because like the pace of it was, because I imagine that's how like PUBG plays, where you either live the entire game or you die immediately. And that's very different from normal Fortnite pace of game where usually it kind of, there's so much, modern maps tend to be so filled with landmarks and places to explore and treasure, or like, you know, chests to open and get loot and stuff and like stock yourself up. This map is like very, very sparse and basic. And it's like landmarks with like giant amounts of empty space in between the next one. And each landmark only has like a handful of chests as well. So it has like an extremely, like, you'll feel more desperate and isolated. And you kind of, it actually pressures you to go towards hotspots. But there's like every other game, you'll see almost no one for like the entire game until the end, and suddenly there's like, oh wait, there's like 10 people left. When did that happen? So it's like, it's just yeah, so far it's, I don't know, it wasn't much I wanted to say about it. I just felt like it's very it's more distinct than I expected as a relatively new player of that game.
Having a very,
so it's like
throwback heavy week with the WoW Classic chat now. Yeah, Fortnite, sure. Classic Fortnite is not, does not feel old enough to me to have a classic retro throwback mode, but
yeah, that's what I thought.
But who am I to judge?
I will say the map looks like terrible by modern standards. That part is definitely old. It, like, it kept reminding me of Gmod maps or something like that. It all looks like, a lot of it is like very deliberately like that. It's like, you know, like sort of like statues made out of like truck parts and stuff. That's clearly like, you know, it's like it's been like welded together with like in Halo Forge or something, where it's like it looks very a lot of the map is kind of, but it's also like more grounded in a way that I quite like. Like it's very just a lot of like normal locations versus modern maps, which are a bit more fantastical. So it's I don't know why that appeals to me so much, but it does quite a bit. Yeah, otherwise that's this week. It, like every week it's going to be changing to a new season basically until December. So it's I don't know, it's a fun time to jump in if you have, like, it's definitely, it, Fortnite's suddenly doing extremely well in terms of like players currently playing. So I guess like it's trying to mine nostalgia for the game as of 5 years ago is working very well.
I mean, I guess if you want to get new players in, simplifying is a good way to do that.
Yeah,
because there's so much going on in modern Fortnite. Whenever I've even thought about touching it, well. Confused and baffled and frightened. So simple Fortnite, I'm on board for.
Yeah, that's a good point. Underestimate that sometimes. Otherwise, I've been playing a lot of Fallout 4. It's not a good idea that I did that. It was like, it's mostly, as I was saying earlier, it's like I haven't been able to like close myself off as much in my room to play Alan Wake or a few other games I've been wanting to try with more isolated conditions. So I just threw on Fallout 4 while podcasts are playing with some mods, working through DLC I never got to originally. Have you played Fallout 4, Kai? I know we've mentioned it before, yeah. But... Yeah,
no, same thought that you've brought up a few times, that it's very much a junk food game.
Yeah, it's my opinion of it hasn't changed much. It's like kind of, it really, because I have like a mod that lets you changes like the original dialogue prompts from being sort of like, you know, Mass Effect style, like one or two words or whatever attached to the like face button prompts. I think that's how it was originally. I've got a mod that changes it to something that looks closer to the other Bethesda games, basically, where like you see like a whole line of dialogue and then choose it from there. But it really like when you see the dialogue outright rather than just kind of the words that kind of gesture in that direction, you really see how limited it is, like more outright. Like, so it's like it always feels like you have to take a big swing in one direction. Like there's so little neutrality in most situations. And also the quests and the way they're designed are rarely like that rewarding in any particular way anyway. So it's like you could take a big swing in any direction and it'll probably end up about as lukewarm an ending as you want. I thought the, like, so I've been working through the DLC. Did you ever get to those?
I never played the DLCs, no. Fallout 4 did not grab me enough to invest money in DLC.
Fair. So there was like four of them, I think. Four main ones. One was like a robot-themed one about... I don't remember the names. I only remember the name of a couple of them. But it's a robot-themed... Like, it basically adds like robot... themed like raiders to the world. There's basically like a new gang that use robots as like there's like basically more robot enemies mixed in with raiders raiding parties, as well as just actual parties of hostile robots that will just attack you, and they just kind of roam very randomly throughout the world, which is kind of different from how the rest of the enemies work. They're usually in like established zones, like, you know, like a certain, like, landmark. And this one is like, they literally will just be anywhere, which is kind of neat, but it doesn't add a ton to the game, to be honest. But it's neat. There's one that's like creating your own vault that I was immediately scared away by, because the vault area that you get given is like gigantic right away. And it's like, oh, this is so much work for nothing. There was the main DLC, I think most people will probably remember best, is Far Harbor, which I thought was quite good, at least as far as Fallout 4 standards. Not in that Fallout 4 is awful, it's just like, it's good, but, you know, not the best RPG content, you know, just solid, which is based on like a coastal area. It's like an island, but it's very like nautical kind of themed as a community. It's got this like fog of radiation that is constantly giving you radiation sickness, which is actually a kind of nice touch for a game like Fallout 4, where radiation is quite simple and is basically just always a health debuff. So the idea of making that mechanic more core to the experience makes more sense to me.
I mean, more like the other Fallouts, where it was an ongoing sort of hazard.
Yeah, exactly. It's like in Fallout 4, it's such a, like, it's mostly a chore when it comes to radiation. It's something to get rid of when you get too much of it. And then that's kind of it. Like, it's just, it's more of an annoyance.
Vacuum away the radiation poisoning and then you're good.
Yeah. what else was there? Oh, yeah. So that one is like the actual story. It kind of reminds me a little bit of New Vegas in a slight way. It feels like it was designed a bit about it or whatever. There's synths on the island, but they're sort of more neutral, and I like a neutral community of synths with a main leader that is very reminiscent of Nick Valentine from the main game. He's sort of like a prototype. They're sort of trying to exist in a neutral sense within this larger island of communities that have their own feelings towards synths and each other, and just don't, you know, they just don't want to be part of conflict. There's the Far Harbor community, that is just a community of humans that exist basically on the coast and are generally struggling because the fog is getting worse. They're trying to figure out a ways around it. The synths are helping with that, but they still don't trust them, and so on. And then there's Church of the Atom, which are like radiation themed zealots, kind of given a bigger role than they had in the main game, and they're also sort of a growing threat as they've got a new leader, and both the human and synth communities are sort of stressed about what they're going to do and trying to find ways to resolve the situation in some way. And basically it actually puts you in a situation where you don't feel like the outright hero like Bethesda games typically do so much now. It kind of puts you in a situation where it's like, there aren't really any easy solutions. You have to pick something that kind of sucks, whether it's something drastic like destroying a whole group or just doing something that's pretty unethical, but at least keeps things peaceful or whatever, something like that. And it's like the closest this Fallout 4 has come to anything resembling that sort of like, what's the word? Like that conflict as a player, as a role player, actually willing, like making choices that don't feel so glorifying or so like, or like outright rewarding, maybe something like that. So it's not bad. It's like as DLC overall, like I was very impressed by it generally compared to the main game, but it's I don't know, it's still Fallout 4, but it's at least it's like a better take on
a step up from the base game.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then there's Nuka World, which I only just started, which is just like Disneyland, except it was taken over by Raiders. And like when I finally got to it, because I didn't actually know that was the premise. I knew about Nuka World as like Disney World, but I didn't realize it's like, oh, that's what this is. And then like once I got into it, it's like, man, this is like the lamest way you can, like, it's not bad, but it feels like, at least from the first like intro of it, it feels like the least interesting way you can approach Fallout, but an amusement park scenario to me.
Yeah,
where it's, I mean, just
it's been taken Raiders. Over by Raiders is the laziest setup for a DLC. Yeah, exactly.
Because I was expecting a lot of robots operating a park in a somewhat violent, tense way, or something like where you're existing in this park that's still sort of weirdly existing in a way that. And there's some sort of like sinister quality to it. That's what I was expecting.
I mean,
and that's definitely not what I got.
My pitch is, someone came to me and said, we want a DLC set in a Nuka-Cola amusement park, is a cult of cola.
Oh, that'd be
good. That would be fun, right? If they're sort of running the park, there's that element of intrigue and some sinister things going on, you could investigate. That would be fun. That would be
exactly.
Like, more fun than shoot the Raiders.
Yeah. I think so far from, I don't know, yeah, again, I don't, I know almost nothing about it, but I'm pretty sure I've read something before saying that Nuka World's fun if you you're like full evil, which I think that I've had that in my mind, and I think the idea, like, I mean, that doesn't necessarily make it great or anything, but I think the idea is that it's basically like a bubble in Fallout 4 where you can be like all evil morality as much as you want, because it's only Raiders and they're all competing against each other. I think that's the plot of it. And so you can just be as like ruthless and cruel as you want within this specific space without feeling like it's going to have like larger ramifications, or you're going to feel bad about some cool character dying or whatever, which I'm not especially drawn to anyway, but I could kind of see that.
It sounds like it would do well if there were proper ramifications for your actions in the base game, but there weren't. So having a space where those consequences don't exist is just more of the base game.
True. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm being very harsh on Fallout 4, but I was not impressed.
Yeah, I wasn't being very... I guess I'm playing it, but I'm not being very positive on it either. It's, so far, like, mostly I'm just, like, running through whatever quests I find, using a hammer or a sword to... knock people apart because I've got a full luck build that makes that happen a lot. That's most of my time enjoying Fallout 4 has been brutally seeing people turn into chunks. and that's been fun enough. Otherwise, that's been my week. What about you, Kai?
Yeah. Wow. It's funny you should mention people being turned into chunks. Because, hey, I've just finished Alan Wake 2, as we've mentioned, but I still don't want to spoil it, so I'm going to save that for our spoiler chat. Once we've all sat down and finished it, I'll say it's good. The only other thing I've been doing this week is watching Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix, which I've really been enjoying. It's a horror series by Mike Flanagan. He's the same guy who did Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Club. Very, very strong horror vibes. This one's all based on the old Edgar Allan Poe stories, as you might infer from being called Fall of the House of Usher. But it's a bit of a modern spin on them, but very... It feels like an adaptation that's not ashamed of what it's adapting, which is a problem I have with a lot of adaptations, where they try and dance around their original sort of progenitor, I guess. But this one is very clear that when the episode is called The Telltale Heart, you are going to get a Telltale Heart story.
Right. Okay.
As much as it, you know, tries to tie them all in together, each story does feel quite self-contained at this stage. You know, there is an overarching narrative. And I think they've done it very well that each episode roughly focuses on one member of the family and how they meet their end, which is an intriguing premise. You sort of like a slasher movie done slowly, but with Edgar Allan Poe. it's just that dwindling sort of party effect. Episode one, right. You've got your 8 characters, and each episode, one gets picked off. And it's great.
Have you seen the rest of Flanagan's works?
I've watched a bit of Midnight Mass. I could never get into the Haunting series.
Okay.
But I love Edgar Allan Poe, so I figured I'd give this one a shot, and I've been really impressed, so I might have to go back.
Yeah, because I haven't. I was just kind of curious how it compared, but it's I have heard very good things about this series as well, though.
I will say, it's quite confronting. I would not be eating dinner or anything watching it. Pretty much any episode. It's
right.
I wouldn't describe it as, you know, body horror. As in the Saw films, it's very much more psychological, sort of thriller, very big on atmosphere. But it also very much doesn't shy away from if someone gets stabbed, they get stabbed and you're going to see some guts. And it's very, very gross.
Okay.
Yeah, people really go through the ringer on that one. But that's been... in my week.
Right.
It's hard to talk about it because you like don't want to spoil things, but it's also Edgar Allan Poe's most famous works, so they're kind of already spoiled a little bit. Like once you clock on what story they're adapting, it's really just counting down to the big moment where someone dies.
Right. Yeah, I see.
Which is fun in its own way. It may not be surprising when a character dies, but it's still scary. I mean, almost they're playing into that dramatic irony of as soon as you see all the pieces lined up, you know what's going to happen if you have even a passing familiarity with Poe's works. But the characters don't, which is the essence of horror.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like the review I read said something similar, where it's just like, yeah, like what you're just describing, where like you feel the, you're looking ahead, like you're feeling it, like the future coming towards you, sort of, as you're watching it. It's like it's very, yeah, I don't know, not many things try to do that as often.
It's the bomb is under the table and it's about to go off, and you have to watch half an hour of the characters not knowing that.
Yeah.
Which is.
You mentioning that it's like not eating stuff reminded me of like, I'm actually not someone that gets affected by that almost ever. The only time in recent memory that I've like been like affected, like, oh, I shouldn't be eating as I'm watching this, is like an Adventure Time episode that I watched like last month. Where it's like, it's the most like gnarly image that I'm not sure I should bother describing. I mean, maybe, I don't know. It's pretty gross. There's this one episode that's basically like an escape room with a bunch of like the more annoying characters in the show, basically. And one of them is Lemon Grab,
who's
this like shriek. Yeah, that dude. Like he's like a shrieking lemon head, like royal figure sort of guy. But he's basically I don't know. He's extreme in a lot of ways in terms as a personality. Basically, this is like everyone's trying to like figure out solutions. And there's this fun part where that's right, they make a pie because that's kind of what one of the characters does. And then like a giant rat like burrows out from the earth and grabs the pie. And then Lemon Grab like punches the rat and like the pie gets like squashed in its maw, but it's like its open mouth still. And then Lemon Grab starts like eating at the mushed up pie in its mouth. and like that's the image. And it's just like that came out of nowhere and I'm eating food.
That's deeply upsetting.
Yeah. Like even just describing it is probably not great. Yeah. And like actually seeing it happen, like, and it's like, because it's Adventure Time, it's like a flurry of things happening all the time. And it's like, it's, yeah, like it kind of tends to shock you with how like sudden it's like, yeah, confronting its imagery can be sometimes.
I will say I too am not super affected by imagery so much. But I was warned ahead of time about episode 2 especially, which is based on Mask of the Red Death.
Okay.
So spoiler alert, if you're gonna go watch it, it's probably the worst imagery in the series. And I don't think I would have done well watching it while eating.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah, it's very much not an empty warning.
Yep.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of really, really clever cinematography and direction, which I appreciate.
Yeah, otherwise, I think that's about it for today's episode.
For our episode.
Yeah, head over to doublejump.co to find our latest articles, links to our social medias, and Discord server. Kai, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, look out for one another. Peace.
Ciao.